Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCown. Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Going old school today, huh? I like it. That's the Beatles. A magical mystery tour. Greetings, salutations to y'all. It's Friday, the 17th day of October, 2014. This is the radio program. It's Primetime Sports on both the radio and television networks, coast to coast. Yours truly, Bob McCown. And joining me in an hour from now, Elliot Friedman, Michael Grange, John Shannon, for the perfunctory round table. And as usual, there's lots to discuss. Some baseball talk, basketball, hockey, perhaps others. Hope you'll stay tuned for that. Between now and then, we invite your telephone calls as we do just twice a week at 416-870-0590, star 590, or 1-888-666-0590. I don't spend a lot of time on Twitter or pursuing my Twitter account, but I loaded it today. And Lauren Shipman, who I'm sure none of you know, well, Lauren does, and maybe there's a few close friends. But Lauren has tweeted, and I do not know the accuracy of this statement, but it's interesting, if true, that in the American Hockey League so far this year, they've had 7 overtimes. Now, in the A, what they're trying this year is they play 4-on-4 for 3 minutes, I think, and then 3-on-3 for 3 minutes. So of the 7 overtime games, only 1 has wound up in a shootout. The others decided by a goal in overtime, which, of course, is the preference. If this percentage holds, one can only hope that the National Hockey League adopts this suggestion. Because I haven't liked the shootout since the day they came in with the idea. I just think it's a terrible way to decide a sporting event. And whether 4-on-4, then 3-on-3 is the absolute answer, I don't know. But I just hate the shootout so much. And with every passing night, every time I see a highlight and it winds up in a shootout, it just feels unsavory, unclean, as though one of these two teams has gotten ripped off by what's the equivalent of a coin toss to decide the game. And if you think that I'm wrong in suggesting that the shootout is akin to a skillless event, just go and take a look at the stats. The best goal scorers in the game are not necessarily good at the shootout. And guys that couldn't put a biscuit in a basket in first 60 minutes if their life depended on it will have some success with the shootout. So I've never been a fan, so, and I confess that. But if this is the next step, then I'm all for it so far. So we'll try and keep you posted over the course of the season as to whether this trend continues to hold. 7 overtimes in the American Hockey League, 6 of them decided in overtime, only 1 in a shootout. Because they're going to 3-on-3 for the last 3 minutes. Something to address a little bit later on, perhaps, with the unsavory bunch that will join me in less than an hour from now. Meanwhile, your telephone calls. Let's go. Frank in Pickering, Ontario. Hello.
Bobcat, how are you?
Good.
Good. Quick question. Your opinion, and I know you talked to all the puckheads there. What's going on in Edmonton, and how much longer do we have to wait to see heads roll there? Obviously, that has been a mess for the last few years, and it doesn't look like it's turning the corner. And can you imagine if the Leafs had all those draft picks to work with? What's your take on what's going on over there?
Well, I'm not sure what the reference there is. If the Leafs had all those draft picks, why, they'd screw it up worse than Edmonton? I don't know if that's the suggestion. Look, and I addressed it yesterday from this perspective. I believe, in fact, I believed last year, I believe more strongly this year, that the evidence has spoken. And it is that however talented these four, five, six young players that they've put all their eggs in on, however talented they are, as a group, they can't win. And it's time to make change. And change is not shuffling the deck chairs on the sinking ship. Change means taking one or two of those studs, preferably two, maybe even three, and moving them out for some other pieces. A goaltender, at least one solid stay-at-home defenseman, maybe a veteran forward that can provide some stability. I hate leadership, but stability. It's not necessary. Those are three things that you could use. You probably use two defensemen. You probably use three defensemen. You know, good stay-at-home defensemen. You need a goaltender for sure. But those are the ingredients. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be any evidence that this collection of young and skilled guys as a group are going to be able to find themselves. How long are you prepared to wait, Edmonton? And I'm not saying you blow it up. I'm not saying you trade them all. But you have to, at some point, cut bait. Pick a couple of them, keep them, and put the rest on the marketplace and see what you can get. Maybe they've done it and there are no takers, but I think most people would find that hard to believe. Clifton Etobicoke, hello.
Yes, Mr. McCown.
Yes, Clifton.
Now, I'm here to dispute your claim, sir, that Kansas City, the Royals I'm talking about, is on nothing more than a hot streak, sir. Because I was looking at their regular season performance, and there were a couple occasions where these guys rolled off 10 wins in a row. And, like, these guys were nip and tuck with Detroit for the division crown all the way down the stretch.
Well, I mean, do you think I wasn't paying attention to that? I mean, I understand that. But I also saw them walk into Toronto and get swept in four. And I quite frankly, wasn't a believer that Kansas City was capable of going to the World Series. Furthermore, neither were the people in Las Vegas who made them a 40-1 underdog at the beginning of the postseason. So you can sit here all you want, Clifton, and look at revisionist history and suggest that you knew and
No. I'm not saying that I know, but here's what I'm saying. I think the reason why most of us are dismissing this as nothing more than a hot streak is because they reeled off 8 wins in a row. Believe me, if they had pushed the Los Angeles Angels to 5 games, winning game 5, the Orioles to 7 games, winning game 7, then we wouldn't be talking about them like that, because then we would have seen where they would be up and they would be down and they would come back and, you know, but it's the... I think this team is much better than people are giving them credit for, man. I really do.
Well, they're playing better than we thought they could. That's what I will say. Are they better? That would be a longer-term process. I quite frankly am not a believer in this being the best team in baseball.
But if Detroit was picked to win the World Series in the preseason, right? The Tigers.
I can't remember.
I won't argue that. These guys battled these guys right to the end. You know.
Well, I get that. I understand. I know exactly what they did. It's full marks. But, you know, a team that gets into the postseason in a wild card spot has to go through a wild card game. And is not ever going to be one of the favorites to win the World Series. There was nothing in what the Kansas City Royals did this year, albeit it was a very good year. They won 89 games. You know, that's pretty good, but it's not extraordinary. They are not a. There was nothing in there that suggested they could roll past teams that, frankly, appeared on paper to be better than they were. Okay, now, I give them full credit, but let's not get carried away.
Now, can I use a football equivalent?
You can use whatever you want.
Green Bay Packers a few years ago got hot at the right time. They had to play all three playoff
games
on the road.
And you know what, Clifton?
Won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Happens with some regularity in sport. I'm not denying that. Edmonton Oilers several years ago creep into the playoffs in eighth place, get to the Stanley Cup final. Lots of stories like it. Colorado Rockies got red hot in September, managed to get into the postseason. Didn't win it all, but... and neither did Edmonton Oilers, as I recollect. And that's what I think Kansas City is. A great story, one that I'm rooting for. But to try and go back and try and find something that we may have missed or suggest that we should have known all along that this Kansas City team was this good. No. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. If they win the World Series, I'm not going to buy it. It's a pretty good baseball team that is red hot, and that is all, at least so far. This team comes back, wins 95-100 games next year, goes to the World Series again. You call me back. We'll have another conversation. I'll fall on my sword, but not till then. Bill in Johnstown, Ontario. Hello.
Hey, Bobcat. How's it going?
Good.
What do you think of what the Leafs are doing with Jake Gardner right now? Do you think they're sending mixed messages after signing him to the long contract and then making him sit in the booth?
Well, it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, we sort of have this expectation that when a team spends a considerable amount of money, and I think it's fair to say that what he's making is a considerable amount. It's not anywhere near the top on the team, but it's a lot of money. That there's a given that the guy will play regardless of his performance. And the issue what if Gardner hadn't signed a new contract? What if Gardner was still in his first entry-level contract, you know, making a nominal amount, $1 million and change, something like that, and he sat out like he has this year? Would there be a big stew over it? I don't think so. I think it's all about the fact that he signed a contract. Signed a contract, therefore, the expectation is he's going to play come hell or high water. But the truth is, you don't really want that as a fan. What you want is you want your organization to put the best 18, 20 guys, whatever it is, on the ice all the time, regardless of what they make. If Phil Kessel is stinking the joint out, I don't care if he makes $8 million. Put him on the bench if you got somebody else you think is better. Now, that would be a much more difficult one for the Toronto Maple Leafs to pull off. But, in theory, that's what you should want as a Leaf fan. So all this angst about Gardner is, I find, kind of interesting. And in some ways confusing. I don't pretend to know for a second whether this guy is better than the other seven or six guys. How many are they dressing? Six or seven? However many they're dressing. Is he not as good as the other guys? Is he not performing in practice? Does he have flaws that have been uncovered? I think you have a right to ask, why did you give him a $4 million contract if he was a flawed player? I think that's a good question to ask. But to somehow equate not playing after you sign him to the contract, I'm not sure I get that one. Heather in Keswick, Ontario. Hello, Heather.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I have a couple of questions about the Jays. The first one is regarding Brett Laurie. At what point do you have to cut bait with him? Like, when is an injury-prone athlete not worth the value that of sitting on the bench, of having not playing? And also, do you think Greg Zahn will ever manage the Blue Jays? So I'll say goodbye and listen to your answer.
Thank you. To the first question, soon you have to make a determination on Lori. Soon may even be this offseason. Here's the mitigating factor. We all love to watch Brett Lori play. We all admire his enthusiasm. We all love the defense that he gives us. But offensively, Brett Lori has never become what most baseball people hoped he'd become. I don't want to say thought he'd become, but hoped he'd become. He's okay offensively. Okay. But I'm not sure he's as good as they thought. He's not terrible. And that's this is where the tough decisions come in. If Brett Lori was a 270, 280 hitter with 15 home runs and played the defense he did, you wouldn't even think about trading him. Can you give me Lori's stats, please, for last year? I was going to say something, but I'm not comfortable with what I thought he was hitting. So let me... And I know the cybermetrics guys are all going to go crazy. Who cares about batting average? But just to try and put stuff into context. 247 was what his average was. You know, and an on-base of 301. You know, it's a little low. And yeah, he had an injured season, but that's sort of where he's been, you know, throughout his career. Never quite where you wanted him to be, where you thought he could be. Now, he's a valuable defensive guy, and he's proven more valuable because he's demonstrated an ability to play second base, at least with some proficiency. I mean, he ain't Goins defensively. He's a much better defensive player, but he's good enough. That versatility gives you points. But there does come a time when you're going to have to make a decision. And here's how that decision, I believe, would be made. It would be made based on circumstance. And the circumstance would be as follows. We need a second baseman, or we can move Lori to second base, in which case we need a third baseman. We could move Reyes to third base, in which case we need a shortstop. We could move Reyes to left field if Cabrera doesn't sign, in which case we'll need either a second and or a third baseman plus a shortstop. If in the course of the conversation somebody wants Brett Lori and is willing to give us something that we need more than we need Brett Lori, then you got to look at it. So I'm not shopping Brett Lori per se, but if his name comes up in the conversation, I'm not saying, whoa, stop. We're not going to have that discussion. The discussion's going to be, all right, if you want me to give up Lori, I got to get something really tangible in return, and it's got to be an infielder, and it might have to be two infielders that I can use. If you, Mr. General Manager, are prepared to make that kind of a deal, then we can talk. Absent that, we're not going to have a conversation. Brett Lori's... The reason Brett Lori is unlikely to be traded is less about Brett Lori, his health, and his statistics, and more about the position he plays. You might not be able to move him because you need another one of him already. And if you moved him, you'd have to have two. Mike in Burlington, hello.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Oh, good. Just a second. The lady previously asked a question about Gregson's future as the manager of the Blue Jays. He has no future as manager of the Blue Jays. He barely has a future as a commentator on Sportsnet. Now, you had something else to say.
That was hilarious. You know what? He's the Don Cherry of Rogers Sportsnet.
Well, we love him, but
that's probably the best thing about him, but I digress and I move on. I just want to pick your brain about the NHL. A couple questions before I get on to my points about attendance and revenue. When they announce attendance at sporting events, be it NHL, NFL, whatever, that is 99.9% of the time paid attendance, not actual butts in the stands, correct?
As a general rule, yes. I've sort of lost track of each league had its own protocol in the past, and I guess still does, has a protocol for what they announce. Is it paid attendance? Is it turnstile count? If it's turnstile, do they count freebies? And the answer is probably yes. Yeah. If it's paid attendance, you're not supposed to count freebies. But then there's a third category, which is anybody that thought about coming to the game, we're going to count.
Yeah,
which is what they did in Florida the other day.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things I was going to get at. The Florida thing and an article I read, a brief excerpt in the Toronto Sun. First, the Florida thing. They said there were 7,311 paid attendance. Then they obviously went on to say there was probably considerably less people in the arena than what was announced over the speakers and what appeared in the summary. Like I said, Lance Hornby in the Toronto Sun the other day alluded to the fact with the Avalanche Leaf game. Here's a first time in a while. The game, by attendance, by announced paid attendance, was not a sellout. Because I guess he pointed out how the ACC has just over 18,800 plus seats.
Mm-hmm.
There was about 60 short in the head count.
My God.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, he brought it up, and, it always makes me kind of giggle. And, I mean, I know you've been in the Toronto market for many decades. When you get this self-proclamation of, we're the mecca of hockey. We are the so-called center of the hockey universe. I'm not doubt. I mean, to me, Canada as a whole, as a nation, adores hockey. However, other sports are picking up the pace behind hockey. But yeah, to me, to single out one city, one specific market as being more hockey crazy than another, I just think that's utterly ludicrous. And I find it funny these same people that toot that horn are nowhere to be seen. With this, announcement that the game was not sold out against the Avalanche the other night.
I thank you for the call and the comments. 21 minutes past the hour, 2. Randy in Milton.
Hi, Bob. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Of course.
Bob, it's kind of a question somewhat relative to the previous caller, and it was just about the whole second NHL team in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I, for one, can appreciate a rivalry, and I think Leaf fans can appreciate, let's say the Florida Panthers move to Toronto, that Leafs versus the Toronto Panthers would be an exciting game to watch and maybe similar to Yankees versus Mets or whatever the case is. But there's three quick things that I wanted to get your take on. And if the second NHL team has similar ticket prices to that of the Leafs, and if the new arena would be in the suburbs like Markham, and if they have the same success rate as they do in Florida, meaning one playoff appearance in 20 years,
yuck,
that there's not going to be sellouts, I mean, just like this Colorado Avalanche game with the Leafs, I think that there's going to be a real problem in getting a successful second franchise in Toronto. And kind of like the second caller, I mean, I think Toronto will be exposed as not the mecca of the hockey universe, but just a city that loves only the Leafs.
Or the exact opposite could happen. A whole bunch of Leaf fans may say, you know what, I'm tired of this Mickey Mouse organization that has been taking my money and hasn't given me anything in return for decades. I'm going to try the other guys in town. I think with the right marketing, I think there is an opportunity for a second team to be not only impactful, but every bit as impactful in the Toronto market as the Maple Leafs. And you know, you and I could sit here and debate the relative merits of both statements all day and not come to any satisfactory conclusion, because no one will know the answer until you do it. Here's what I would say. I would say if you're expecting a second team in Toronto with significantly lower ticket prices, like Buffalo Sabres-type ticket prices, you're dreaming in Technicolor. Not going to happen. Never. If you're, you mentioned the Florida Panthers and them coming to Toronto. First of all, I'm not sure it would be the Florida Panthers. And I'm also not certain that because you're in Toronto, you automatically contract the same disease the Toronto Maple Leafs have contracted, which is the L disease. And I think a winning second team would have every opportunity of overtaking the Toronto Maple Leafs in terms of popularity, at least in the short term. I think the Mets-Yankees comparison, which I've heard before, isn't entirely valid. For a variety of reasons, not the least of which there's a geographical question when it comes to New York baseball fans. Less so in Toronto. If the team was in Markham, I think that's a terrible place to put it. I wouldn't put it in Markham. But if it was in Markham, you'd have a geographical situation. I don't see very many people from Oakville, Hamilton, Mississauga going to Markham to watch a hockey game. But if they were in the mid-north section of the city of Toronto, in proximity to highways, I think you'd have no trouble selling tickets, no trouble getting revenue that was comparable to what Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment generates. That's my opinion, which may be worth nothing. I thank you for the call. Willie Welland, hello.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hi, good.
I thought I'd lighten your day a little bit. I got nothing, well, they're sports related, I guess, but I thought I'd lighten your day a little bit. I was on YouTube last night, YouTubing, I guess I'll call it, I don't know, and I came across a couple of old commercials, which are now in my top five greatest commercials of all time, of yourself on the golf course with one Mr. Doug Gilmore and
Ricky Henderson.
And our boy Ricky Henderson, yeah.
Yep. I have only a vague memory if you're asking, like, you know, I remember the shoot, but I don't really remember it all that well. It was 20-something years ago.
It's one of the few times I've ever seen you without your glasses on. You look like a young Franco Harris without the tan. You're a big man. How tall are you?
6'2".
6'2"? Because you dwarf Dougie, that's for sure. You and Ricky were about...
No, Ricky's smaller than I am, too.
Is he?
Yeah, I say Ricky is 5'11", maybe, and Dougie's probably 5'9". I'm just guessing.
Wow, because I never seen you stand up besides... Well, actually, I've seen an interview, actually, too, with the Stony Ridge. But anyway, so then I moved on to the infamous Doug McClain. I know it's water under the bridge.
Yeah.
But I would just like to say that I totally think you could take Doug McClain in any type of... Whether it comes to fisticuffs or wordsmithing. I got your back. Welland has your back. We love you.
Thanks, pal. See ya.
Take her easy.
27 past the hour. We'll take the break. More of your phone calls coming back. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. More of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Here's where we are, 870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. If you get a line to ring, yeah, what the hell? Probably won't get on anyway. What, do you want me to lie to you? Too late to call now. Unless everybody hangs up. You never know. No, we do advise you to call in early. Ken in Oshawa has been waiting a while. Hello, Ken.
Never hang up on you, my friend. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, pal.
Going back to the Leafs and the Oilers, actually, I was thinking the same thing as you the other night. I was thinking about the Oilers maybe unloading one or two of the young guns they got there. I was wondering possible trade options you would throw the Oilers' way to maybe try and grab one of those centers out of there.
I can't think of one Leaf that the Edmonton Oilers would really want that the Maple Leafs would be willing to give up. Can you?
We got a little bit of a goalie. A little bit of a goalie issue where we've got two guys who could...
Okay, I'll make you a deal. I'll play Edmonton, you play Toronto.
Okay.
Who do you want to give me?
I'd re-sign Cody Franzen for 3-4 years and offer him in a package with maybe Reimer.
Okay, first of all, Cody Franzen's just a guy. I don't need a guy. I need a stud defenseman. You don't have one. As far as the goaltenders are concerned, we can have a conversation, but it's not going to be about Reimer. It's going to be about Bernier. You want to trade Bernier? Because I'm listening actually, if you want to trade Bernier.
I actually am not against trading Bernier.
All right, I'll listen if you want to trade Bernier. You got anybody else that I want? Let me think. I don't want Kessel.
Not that I'm willing to give up.
Yeah, well, again, see, you know. There's nobody, I mean, if I'm another team, I look at the Toronto Maple Leaf roster, and if I've got, you know, potential stud kids like this, I don't think you got anything that I want.
You got a decade
of losers. That's what you got. Pardon me. Do I want to get a draft pick?
Yeah, maybe not maybe our first.
The only thing I've had in Edmonton for the last 6 years is draft picks. What I don't want is more of them. I'd like to get rid of a couple of the ones I picked.
Very true, very true.
Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. To Miles in Mississauga. Hello.
Bobcat, how are you?
Swell.
I know you're not a soccer aficionado, but...
There's the understatement of all time. Go ahead.
Have you ever seen a franchise comparable to TFC that's been so poorly run?
Yes.
So dysfunctional since day one?
Yes, Toronto Maple Leafs.
From day one, though. From its inception to now. They've never got it right.
Well, they're run by the same guys who run the hockey team, so I don't think this should be that surprising to you. I mean, these guys that screw up a one-car parade and have. So, nothing they do surprises me. But part of it is, look, and I don't care about the soccer team, and I'm not a soccer fan, but I understand that there are some out there, so I am sympathetic. But at some point, you got to figure out, this is the guy that's going to make this thing work and give him the time to do it. This constant changing of coaches and managers is not the answer. It's the result of losing. It's the result of changing upper management. I mean, Lewicki comes in, he wants to change things. The guy before him wanted to change things. The guy before him wanted to change things. Then Lewicki brings in somebody underneath and he wants to change stuff. Everybody wants change. Everybody thinks they're smarter than the other guy. You know, sometimes what you do is you just take a look at it and say, okay, you're the guy. You run it. I'll call you in 2 years. Let's see how you're doing. And I mean, that's the philosophy you have to take. You got to stop looking at it as every game, every situation, every play, every goal, every missed playoffs, every. You got to start saying there's a big picture here and somebody has to look at the big picture. And part of that is put some guys in place that you trust, that you think are good, preferably that are the best, and then get the hell out of the way. And, now, there comes a point invariably where if that doesn't work, you probably have to change again. But is it possible it's just a coincidence that two of the worst franchises in all of professional sport are both owned by Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment? Is that a coincidence? Do you think they think in any other city in North America, any other major professional sports city in North America, when they look at the worst pro sports cities, look at the worst teams of the major, I don't know if you can call soccer a major sport, but let's throw it in there. Do you think there's a conversation happening in LA, New York, Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Philadelphia on talk radio saying, you know, that situation in Toronto with the Leafs and the and TFC, just a coincidence. It doesn't really mean anything. You know, one team, one organization with 10 years of complete and utter ineptness, and the other one has never made the playoffs before and won't again this year. That happens. Just bad luck. That's what it is. It's bad luck. No! Not bad luck. It is what it is. You got what you got. Keith in Burlington. Hello.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of change, where I'm going to go with what I'm about to say is this whole Babcock rumor about him coming to Toronto, excuse me, when his contract expires. I don't know how strong this rumor is, how real it is.
Me neither.
Bum fluff. I'm not sure. But if I was to ask you, who's a better coach? And I'm just going to use Michel Therrien as an example because I'm a Habs fan. So who's the better coach, Randy Carlyle or Michel Therrien? You might get people that say, well, Carlyle's won a ring. He's never really had the horses, you know, in Toronto.
Sure.
Therrien's doing well, but he's got a good, you know, he's a good coach. You can't knock him.
Yep.
He's got a good group of guys. So let's suppose for talking sake that in the year, and I'm not sure if it's next year that Babcock's contract expires. But
at the end of this year. Yep.
At the end of this year. So let's just suppose for talking sake that Carlyle manages to get this group into the third round and they get knocked out. So he's taking them to the third round of the playoffs. Does this now mean that Babcock's in regardless? This is what I can't get my head
around. I don't know the answer to that. And I mean, there's nothing to get, there's really nothing to get your head around because we have no way of knowing what is going on in Detroit. There are some issues. I'm hearing repeatedly that the Red Wings and the Tigers and Little Caesars are all for sale. The Ilitches are in the process of doing estate planning and have let it be known that somebody could buy the whole kit and caboodle. If I know that, I'm quite sure Mike Babcock knows that. I can't speak to his relationship with the ownership, but maybe he sees a culture change, a seed change happening at a larger level in Detroit. Now, most recently, Babcock was quoted as saying his first choice was to stay in Detroit. Is he saying what he thinks the public, the ticket buying public in Detroit would want to hear? Or is he telling the truth? Don't know. So there are some circumstances under which you could see Babcock leaving. And yes, to the best of my knowledge, his contract expires at the end of this year. He has not re-upped. Some have suggested he has interest in coming to Toronto. I think Mike Babcock is brighter than that, but maybe not. Maybe he's going to fall into the same trap as so many others who believe that they can fix the unfixable. At least heretofore unfixable. So there's a lot of ifs in that equation. I would say this. I'd be very surprised if the Maple Leafs missed the playoffs again this year if Randy Carlyle keeps his job. That's what I'll say to you. I'll go that far. I'd be surprised if he keeps his job. But is it going to be Mike Babcock that comes in and takes it away from him? That's too hard to figure. It's too easy to connect the dots here and say, that's what's going to happen. There's lots of variables and lots of time left. Lots of things going on that you and I don't totally understand. Jim in Peterborough, hello.
Hello, Bob.
Hi.
First time caller.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, I just wanted to talk about Jake Gardner. I've listened to your show many times, and for the last couple of years, obviously Jake Gardner is not in the good books with Randy Carlyle again starting this year.
Sounds like it.
Yep, exactly. So my idea, and I'll sit back and listen to your comment. Jake Gardner has a lot of talent as a hockey player. And the fellas that are on the fourth line for the Leafs, Gardner has more talent than all three of those put together. And my question to you and your opinion, and I appreciate it, is why wouldn't they try putting him up front if he's a defensive liability? Why not put that talent up, even if it's on the fourth line? The kid can skate better than any one of those guys on that fourth line. I'll sit back and listen to your comments.
I've heard it before. I've heard this suggestion before. All I can say is that it may appear easier to make that move than it actually is. But you know what? The truth is I'm sitting here trying to think about it, and I don't know. I mean, I've never played in the National Hockey League. I don't know how much difference there is between playing defense and forward. I mean, I can make a guess at it, but I really don't know. We've seen it happen before. A long, long time ago, Red Kelly was a defenseman for the Detroit Red Wings, came to Toronto. They converted him to center. And he had a great rest of his career as a center iceman. Never looked like a defenseman playing out of position in my eyes anyway. I'm a kid, but And there are doubtless many other cases, or some other cases. I wouldn't say many. Doesn't happen every day. I can't answer the question is where we're going. I can tell you this, that the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Maple Leaf fans more than the organization perhaps, have had a tendency and continue to have a tendency to look at young players that they have and think they are better than what they really are. That their perception is seen through rose-colored glasses. And that it is not necessarily a perception that's shared anywhere else in the National Hockey League. Now, this may be true of fans in any city. but it's especially true here. It was not so many years ago that Luke Shen was supposed to be the next great Leaf defenseman. I don't have to tell you how that turned out. Now, I'm not saying Jake Gardner is Luke Shen reincarnate and he's going to wind up getting traded. But I wouldn't, and I wouldn't panic over this thing. Here's what we know. Right now, he's not playing. Right now, Randy Carlyle thinks he's got better defensemen than Jake Gardner. And you might, you can make an argument that he's wrong, but it's not going to influence Randy Carlyle. If this thing drags on for another week or 10 days, then let's have a conversation about the future of Jake Gardner. Right now, it's a blip on the radar. Unexpected, perhaps, but still a blip. Mike in St. Catharines, hello.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Just hi, well.
Your take on the situation. I know there's a deal in place with the CHL. Players drafted there go back there in the case of Darnell Nurse and Bo Horvat. Yet you got Tero Teravainen, who goes back to, he has three options. They could send him to Mississauga. They could send him to the Swedish Elite League. They could send him to the AHL. And I understand the reason why the CHL has this, but do you not see that this could be maybe a disadvantage to the players that are drafted from Canadian team or from Canada and CHL?
Disadvantage? How? Why? Because they can't get sent to Europe?
Well, no, that they couldn't get sent to, say, the AHL team for development. Say a kid like Nurse that his size, maybe he has a better chance of advancing going to the AHL rather than going back to junior at his age or even Horvat.
Look, and I guess, you know, I've looked at that. I see your argument, but I think there are other factors in here. And one is that, you know, the National Hockey League has a developmental, essentially a developmental deal with the Ontario Hockey League, or the CHL, rather, the Canadian Hockey League. And the preference of the CHL has always been, if you want to keep them after 18, fine, we'll let them go. But if you're not going to keep them, then you got to send them back to us, because they, you know, players that are high, especially players that are high draft choices, and that's usually what we're talking about here. High draft choices have considerable market value back in their junior with their junior team. In fact, probably more marketable value with their junior team after they're drafted than before. So they become more household names. You know where they're going to go. You follow them with a different kind of interest level or passion. And if you send them to the American Hockey League, you're not doing the CHL team any good, any service. And I think they deserve something for the development of the player. And I believe that's the genesis of this whole concept. David Branch will call and correct me if I'm wrong, but and he may very well, too. I may be dead wrong, but I think that's really what CHL's position on this thing is. We don't mind if you draft this kid at 18 and he's good enough to make your team, fine. We say goodbye. We're not going to hinder the development of the kid. But if he's not going to play in the NHL, we would like him to come back to junior. Now, the kids that slipped through that crack are kids that weren't in junior, major junior to begin with. Like the Leafs drafting of, you know, a Swedish player. Or it could be any player, could be any European player. So then there's an additional option of sending that guy, in theory at least, sending that guy back to his European team. I must say to you that of all the issues that are out there, I don't have a problem with this one. This one seems pretty fair to me. And I'm not sure in the long term that a kid is going to benefit more from going to the AHL at age 18 or 19 than he would going back to junior. I thank you for the call, though. Friedman will be here. Grange and Shannon will join him. The roundtable's next. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.